Everything you said, they already knew, more or less.
Yeah, this is it.
Didn't know. Oh, I'm feeling it.
Two of
those
special atomic bombs.
Yes.
Here we are. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast. The Star Wars Report podcast is brought to you by the fine folks supporting us at patreon.com/Star Wars Report. That's where you can get really cool bonus content that we record, such as Rogue Transmissions. It's available at patreon.com/Star Wars Report. And welcoming a brand new sponsor, Sphero. These are the droids you're looking for. Control R2-D2, BB-8, and BB-9E with your smart device. Watch the Star Wars film together and explore some pretty sweet holographic simulations and more. Available at a brand new, lower price. And they all come with a free force band while supplies last. That's at Sphero.com/Star Wars. S-P-H-E-R-O. Sphero.com/Star Wars. Oh, and with that, on with the show. Like I said, welcome back. It is the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've joined us. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Please delete as appropriate. Hey, I changed up the order there. But whenever you're listening to this podcast, we welcome you and are glad to have you. Sitting across from me virtually via Skype, the Skype technology, is Mark Herleman. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, you know, subliminally, the song you picked, I could have swore I heard Mon Mothma at the beginning. I was like, yeah, nice. Where'd you get this?
Wait, which part? Was it, hey-dee-ba-doop? Is that what the part? Or is
you
it
know, like, oh, like she was talking in the background, I was just expecting her to be like, we have something to report. I was like, how did he mix that in?
Yeah, no. Many Bothans died.
Mm-hmm. It's always good to be back. It's always good to be talking to Star Wars.
Welcome back, man. Welcome back to the program. Bruce is out this week. He is sick. Not unlike many members of your household, evidently.
Right? Yeah. It's going around, man. It's knocking them down like better than a stormtrooper can shoot to Jawa, apparently.
Considerably. And that's saying something. No, welcome back. It is the Star Wars Report. We've got a lot to talk about in this week's show, as always. In fact, we were just chatting it up in the pre-show a little bit and just kind of, you know, talking about how we've kind of missed. We haven't really had the kind of time to process The Last Jedi in the way that we did with, well, Force Awakens and, you know, with Force Awakens and then Rogue One. Now Last Jedi, all of our attention's kind of shifting to Solo, and we haven't really had time to process it, but it's been kind of more top of mind for me lately, because, of course, the last episode we did for last week was our full commentary track, which we recorded over at Michael and Christy's house. Michael of Cloud City Casino and Christy, of course, of Galactic Fashion. An amazing Star Wars nerdy couple, and, of course, Bruce and I went over there. We ate pizzas. It was great.
Yeah.
Last Jedi is kind of back top of mind for me. I don't know about you, Mark. It's kind of back at the surface of my fandom because of all of the hype and excitement and news stories that have been coming out surrounding the digital and now Blu-ray release. As you're listening to this podcast, the Blu-ray release comes out today because we're releasing this on Tuesday.
Right.
Go buy the Blu-ray, pop it in tonight, and then you can listen, if you haven't caught it yet, put on last week's episode, you can sync it up and watch it with us. We had an absolutely amazing time, but I actually wanted to lead off today's show and not really talk about any of the news or any of the trends or what's happening with the Solo movie or any of that. We're talking about the Star Wars The Last Jedi Blu-ray and, most importantly, some of the amazing bonus features that have come along. Now, Mark, I don't know about you, but as I'm sure, I think I'm probably the most of everyone, of me, Bruce, and you, I'm super into the behind-the-scenes side of Star Wars. I'm a huge nerd. I loved, like, the Phantom Menace documentary. What was it called? The Beginning? Oh, that was so, I remember watching that for the first time.
I love they did it for real, I think is what it was, where the Anakin and Obi-Wan fight on Mustafar.
That was really good. And even that documentary they did for Attack of the Clones, the Puppets to Pixels documentary was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, the Phantom Menace was
like
the last time.
One.
And then we had Empire of Dreams that came out.
That was a good one.
I guess it was on the DVD release of the original trilogy, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think so. That one came in with the music one if you got the right combo pack, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I absolutely loved that, too. So the standard has been high, but not in the Disney era. In the Disney era, we really didn't get much behind the scenes for The Force Awakens. And a lot of that, I think, is from the behind the scenes stuff, from George Lucas / Michael Arndt's script getting booted out to Harrison Ford's injury on set. And I get the sense that J.J. Abrams runs a more closed and less open set, whereas what happened with the behind-the-scenes features and the one I want to talk about most today, the director and the Jedi, the full-length documentary on the bonus features here, is Rian Johnson was, like, mic'd up during the entire production. And so they take you really behind the scenes, and you live through every moment of the making of a Star Wars film in the Disney era. And let me tell you, man, it's a little different than making a Star Wars movie if you go back and watch, like, the beginning. Because it's a machine. Like, just watching the logistical, like, there's parts of the documentary where there's Rian Johnson and his producer Ron Bergman, and they have like three giant whiteboards in their office, and it's just nothing but trying to circle dates of the different locations and all the different sets that have to be built, shot, torn down, another one built on that same stage. Like, just the logistical nightmare of making a Star Wars movie. It's just awe-inspiring how they even pulled it off logistically, to say nothing of like preserving the quality of the stories and the characters and the performances. Like, it was nuts. That is the absolute highlight of all of the bonus features on it. Like, that is worth buying the Blu-ray just in and of itself.
I like a good commentary too. I mean, when you get like the director's commentary, or even when they have the sound and the digital artists that sit in on them and stuff, and you get multiple tracks, you learn a lot of really cool things. Like, I remember watching episode one, and there's a part where Qui-Gon is analyzing Anakin's blood, and he's talking about the way metachlorines work and stuff. It's like the only time you will ever hear George Lucas talking about it, but it's like,
yeah,
it's right there. It's just beautiful. When I got a hold of this, that was one of the first things I went to, was the deleted scenes. We were looking for a blooper reel. My oldest daughter, she absolutely loves Daisy Ridley, so she was kind of hoping to see some bloopers of that. She was a little bummed in that, but
yeah,
I snuck in and got it. We got to watch all the deleted scenes. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, we talked about the Finn and Phasma showdown one before on a past episode, where we got to watch actually Finn take a more active part in Phasma's end. I mean, he actually takes her hand off before blasting her. Like, I thought that was kind of cool. There is
a BB-8's really cool
reveal of Rey's goodbye to Finn. Well, Finn's like kind of sitting there holding onto the pulse beacon.
Yeah, is by reveal an actual like BB-8 holo projects the scene that he was recording.
and I love Finn's line. He's like, okay, that's a little creepy.
Creepy, man. A little creepy.
But I think that the dialogue between him and the droid would have worked great, because it's the total thumbs up that he gets a little earlier, kind of like BB-8's way of saying, hey, I still got your back, even when you're out. I got your back. Like, I thought that was a cute scene. And one that I really wish they would have kept, and I think, I'm not sure if this was Rey's third lesson, but the lesson about darkness rising, when Luke and her are standing up on a ridge doing some stuff, and they look down and they see the caretaker's village being attacked, and she's ready to rush off. And Luke's like, well, are you going to be here in a month from now when they come back and they double their stuff? And it's the whole point of, you know, yeah, you may save the day today, but what's the long-term solution if you don't take care of the problem? They're just going to come back and you're going to create more suffering. And I think that would have been a great scene to leave attached, because of the implications it has for Luke. I think it plays well into why Luke ran, you know, the aspect of the lesson that he learned at Dagobah and the lesson that at that time he was ignoring. It seems like he went back and reevaluated the lesson that Yoda and the ghost of Kenobi were trying to tell him, that he should show restraint, that he, you know, he lost a lot of his tactical motion and stuff going forward by doing that. But I think at the same time, he loses sight of the fact that in the end, he prevailed because of the love that he had, love that made him do something. But I think that would have been a great thing for people like me that were conflicted by seeing this kind of Luke, because as Rey rushes down there, it turns out the men who spend months and months away at sea have come back, and they're having a huge party. So she busts in, and it's a great moment where she's just like, lightsaber above her head, and everybody stops, the music stops, and one of the caretakers is like waving her little shit, and then all of a sudden she starts shaking her thing too, and oh, it was great. Like, I like the humor in that, and then Luke comes down and starts laughing at her. We get a great touching moment with Luke in mourning over Han Solo, and he reaches out to Leia, and they have a connection there. Well, like, that one actually,
so you've seen the
tears.
Deleted scenes, but have you, question for you here, Mark, is have you by any chance, did you watch them with the commentary?
I haven't watched them with the commentary.
There's a commentary on the deleted scenes. I think that'll be a good one because we don't have time on the show to play all of them, but I just want to play this as a sampling. I've not heard this yet, so I think it'll be like a nice little taste of what, you know, Rian Johnson has said about the scene. This is that moment. This is that Luke and Morning. That's his Luke and Morning moment. Let's see, what's the title? Luke has a moment is the title of it.
Yeah, Luke has a moment.
Here we go.
So I mentioned in the commentary, one of the big discoveries in the editing of this was we ended up doing a lot less big intercutting between the storylines as we cut the movie. We realized we wanted to put sequences together and stay in the same place for longer. This is an example of that. This is a transition that originally happened after their conversation here where we transition back to Leia. And at some point, we realized we wanted to just keep going with this story, and then it made sense to lose this so we could go straight into their day on the island. But the collateral damage of that was losing this beautiful performance from Mark, which is not only gorgeous where he gets a moment alone, but also then was originally designed to cut with this shot of Carrie and kind of a matching cut and show the two of them kind of just having a moment alone mourning, which is really beautiful. I'm glad we at least get to see it here.
That's one of those things. It's the casualty of the structure of the movie. They needed to continue the Rey's training and not break it up too much.
Those music cues give me goosebumps, man. No, I can't wait to go back and listen to those. Because like the next one, the last one, is when Finn, Rose, and DJ infiltrate into the Superior, or whatever it was called, that big destroyer. And we get a moment where Finn gets recognized by one of the other stormtroopers. What I want to know the most about this, though, is that Tom Hardy? I swear
it
to
is.
God.
That by the way, that is. Yep.
Oh, I knew it. When he said, look at you, made it officer. The way he said that, man, that brought me right back to one of his early movies. I was like, that's got to be Tom.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a great. And I'm conflicted on that because feeling like I did at the time that was Tom Hardy, I was like, we got to keep the scene. But overall, I don't know if it necessarily needed to be there. You know, like there's a story of Finn that I feel like Finn's not getting his just due. And a lot of these little cut scenes kind of really take that away. They kind of nick him left and right. I think the most we get now is with Rose saying, oh, you're the Finn. Like, and that's really it. I mean, you stop and think about the fact that, I mean, he's the only person right now live in the Resistance that has firsthand information about the First Order. This should put him at, like, Uber General or Admiral level. I mean, you know, now that he's willing to play ball. Like, I'm expecting the next movie, wherever it's set, he's going to have a higher role in things.
Well, he was just the janitor, you know. No one pays attention to Finn. Oh,
except
man.
Except for BB-8. BB-8 pays attention to him.
But I guess, so we've kind of ping-ponged around and hit a little bit. Again, we don't really have time to do, we're not going to do an in-depth breakdown. I've not had a chance to listen to the feature with commentary, which I'm very much looking forward to. It's one of those things where I wish they would make that available as an audio file so that I could listen. Because listen, right? I know the film back-to-back. Like, I can't really watch it. And, you know, I don't want to burn through all the data on my phone just to listen to the commentary while I'm out and about driving or something like that. But it of course, got the Director of the Jedi, again, the crown jewel. I know, Mark, you haven't had a chance to see it yet, but that's the bonus feature. And, of course, you got to budget an hour and a half. It's a full-length documentary. But
watch it after this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, of course, they have the commentary, deleted scenes, and deleted scenes with commentary. Then they have a feature called The Balance of the Force and Lighting the Spark, Creating the Space Battle. I have not seen that one. Mark, was that a good one? You were a fan of that one?
Yeah, I found that there was a lot of insightful things into there, what's going on with Rey and stuff. That's kind of my jam, is when they do things like that. What really sucks is like when you get like Filoni's where they're like, we're going to tell you everything you need to know about Mortis. And you're like, oh, there's nothing here we can't tell you. Like that's the rough ones when they're like, but I understand the need for them having to keep certain things a secret. But when you get in these kind of things, like you like to have that curtain peeled back and get to see all the really cool, how they're working. Yeah. Like in the deleted scenes, when you're watching BB-9E, right, you see how the working model is. It's got that little device on the back, you know, like it's actually got extra wheels. And my kids were able to see that for the first time. Like, they never saw that version of a BB-8 or a BB-9 unit. So they're like, why does he got all that extra stuff on him? Because that's before he's CG'd out. Like,
yeah,
it was kind of cool.
Well,
and then we also, the other scene too was Finn and there's a longer Canto Bight scene.
Ah.
Which, honestly, I'm it was mostly just character models. It was like an extended version of the Mos Eisley Cantina. So
yeah.
I could see that one being cut out. There was really not much that one added to the overall story.
Yeah, no, definitely. But yeah, so and of course there's an Andy Serkis live one night only taking off.
Yeah.
So again, some really good stuff. The actual, and then I actually want to take a moment to, and this is very unlike me, but on the collectible side, the good folks at Disney were nice enough to send us a review copy of the Blu-ray. So that's kind of what I've been holding on to talk to. And it's a pretty sweet cover. It's the standard. You've all seen the sort of the poster that is being used as the cover art, and that's sort of the cover with the back is a very nice kind of frame of Mark Hamill versus Kylo Ren. Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker.
Nice.
And it's that standoff pose.
Shot, right?
It's the shot on Crait where he's standing there with the Obi-Wan pose, right? And
so
Kylo Ren
is the one where the cliffs are in the background, or is this the one where Kylo's walkers are in the background? Because
this is actually the one that's neither. It's the
shot.
Old West standoff where you see Kylo way off to the left and Luke way off to the right. That shot, okay. Kylo's pointing his cross-bladed lightsaber in that menacing way, the same way he did. That's the nice thing is you notice the lightsaber techniques, at least with Kylo Ren, are very consistent. He does have a very distinct style of the way he holds a saber and points it, and he like almost talks with it.
Well, his ready position. I love the way like he pulls his leg back with his right arm while it's still being unhooked, and then he lunges forward and ignites it at the same time. Like, that's a pretty aggressive move.
Oh yeah, and a nice little character montage at the bottom. It's a nice look. It fits very well with the Force Awakens Blu-ray style. If you want to, I still to this day, when it comes to the Star Wars films, I think Star Wars films are the only ones left of at least currently coming out that I like really want a physical copy.
Because they
have all these features on the actual Blu-ray itself.
It also had an alternate opening which had some things in it that would have been pretty cool, but I think that the one that they stuck with was good. But that also, you know, there we had word about a possible ending as well. Didn't you have something about IGN had on that?
Oh yeah, well, and I think that's the last thing I did want to mention. I'm glad you brought that up, Mark. I almost forgot to mention that. That's sort of like was my takeaway of the documentary itself was this remarkable, honest look at the creative process of the way Rian Johnson wrote Luke Skywalker as someone who's fallen into cynicism and has given up on the Jedi Order and has given up on himself as the solution to the galaxy's problems. And
it's almost like he stopped seeing the Jedi as an order and started to see them as a religion. Because, I mean, he even calls them a Jedi religion. I was all like, oh, Luke's calling them a religion now, too.
That ancient religion is, yeah. What's interesting is that, and I want to put my cards out on Front Street here again just as a reminder, because we've talked about this film a bit, but it bears repeating where Riley stands on this. I do struggle with the extent to which Luke has just given up. But to me, it makes it that much more beautiful when he does return and face off against Kylo Ren. And that, to me, more than redeems the elements of Luke's character that were changed and so different from the Luke we knew in Return of the Jedi. Because the Luke we knew from Return of the Jedi returned at the end of this film. Yeah. And I know I've gotten emails. I know a lot of you guys disagree, and that's okay. We're Star Wars fans, and we all have opinions, and they differ. That's all right. But that's sort of me. I'm putting my cards on the table because, you know, Mark Hamill probably does not come on my side, and you really see that in the documentary. There's a point, Mark, where he's shooting the scenes of his death and him facing off against Kylo Ren, and you see him just physically struggling. Physically. Like, it's not like he looks upset. He is wrestling to give his best performance. And I have so much admiration for Mark Hamill and the way that he approached those scenes, because he was a professional. And while in the interviews and on the set, and everyone on the set, you could see the crew around him. Everyone knows, yeah, Mark is struggling with this. And he stuck to it and delivered the best performance he could, and it made me, you know. And you also see a very I don't know. Ryan Johnson with Ryan Johnson, he comes off both at once timid and kind of soft-spoken, but at the same time, he is fully committed and confident in the story he's written.
And the vision
he has is that Luke is not the hero of the story. Luke is there to serve Rey in the story, and not in the way that he's there to help Rey. He's there to, be a part of the hardest thing that Rey. And this is what Ryan Johnson says in the documentary. He was thinking about what's the toughest thing these characters could face, and for Rey, that's the hero she's heard of lets her down, and she's a nobody, and she has to face that. And so the Luke Skywalker we knew from Return of the Jedi is a casualty of that story, right? Luke Skywalker isn't there anymore.
Ryan also would probably have a better idea of the conversation that Leia and Luke had after Ben's fall. I mean, that to me is one thing I really want to know is how much did, I mean, we know she later blamed Snoke, but at first, how much did her Han blame Luke? What if it's blaming Luke that drove Han away as well?
Yeah.
So I was thinking about that kind of regret that Luke has because, you know, this isn't just a student. This isn't just your order. This is your nephew. You blew it with family. You know, I mean, and this is Luke who didn't have a family, and now he does. Like, so there's a powerful aspect in that, too, that when we get that part of the story, I expect it to resonate really deeply and be a very dark chapter in Luke's life. Because, you know, how do you tell your sister that because of you, your son fell to the darkness that you were trying to prevent?
Yeah. No. You see that. By the way, there were some other really cool moments. The Mark Hamill nearly, tearing up when talking to and reuniting with Frank Oz and seeing the Yoda puppet in person. He just totally moved, and it was a really, really beautiful moment. It was so cool. That was a great moment.
How much does Hamill reveal about George's alternate ending, though?
Well, and so this is something that came out literally earlier today that I saw kind of circling around, and I felt it kind of related to what we were talking about with the Blu-ray itself, and that is a new interview where Mark Hamill's talking about the alternative version of Luke. So not only was Mark Hamill. both had concerns. And by the way, unlike Mark Hurlman, Mark Hamill had literally read the script where he survived or treatment where he survived and ended up through episode 9. This is an interview with IGN where he's talking about the differences in the approach of Luke Skywalker between J.J. Abrams and Ryan Johnson. And Hamill suddenly changed tack and explained, quote, "I happen to know George Lucas didn't kill Luke until the end of episode 9, after he trained Leia, which was another thread that was never played on in The Last Jedi." Let's let that sink in for a second. What might have been.
That for me is one of the biggest things about Leia's character that I was kind of sad about. You know, my favorite Leia story is New Jedi Order. She finally ditches politics and accepts her heritage and becomes a Jedi. And that, I will forever love that series for that.
Yeah.
And I think going into this, finding out that she stayed a politician for as long as she did before she went the route of war general, which I'm cool with. I like that. Like, she's taken action. She's always been an action taker. But with everything that happened in the real world with Carrie Fisher and stuff, it'll be curious down the road to see where they were planning to go. And if that was where they were going to go, it would have made a heck of a lot of sense with putting Leia in a position where she is going to basically take over for Luke. I mean, she's definitely been the one that has pushed things in the direction of making things right in every scenario, in every film. And it just kind of makes sense for her, you know, basically to be like, look, you know, you've done your best. Now it's my turn to take over and do it. Like, oh, man, what could have been?
Yeah. Oh, fun fact, right down at the bottom of this article, quote, "Recently, Rey actress Daisy Ridley revealed that J.J. Abrams himself had also written treatments for a full trilogy, right? But that Ryan Johnson used little of it for The Last Jedi." Huh. You don't say. Oh, man. It's going to be very fascinating where episode 9 goes with all this, right? Like, this is going to be... I kind of like the fact that it... I don't know. Maybe the sort of conflict of ideas is what breeds an incredible, you know, end of this chapter of the saga. That's what I hope with episode 9. I'm very hopeful for episode 9, by the way.
Well, one of the topics that we didn't touch on in the story, this episode, IGN had done an interview with the actress, the voice actress for Aiden Versio, and a couple of the plot points in there was how some of the dialogue was made up on the spot. Like, they had one scripted, but when they were there and they were acting it out, they'd had these conversations about how they thought the characters should react, and they basically rewrote a lot of the major pivotal scenes right there on the spot, which is very interesting when you think about the realm of where we're at right now. You've got the story group who seems to be very hands off for the most part, coming in and pulling directors out on occasion, but doesn't seem like, you know, like they're like, this has to happen, this has to happen, then this has to happen, everything else is you. Like, there's they're definitely giving a lot of freedom to these people, and yet it all comes down to the creative styles of each director.
I mean,
you know, you look at the video game and the director let them do it, so it happened. But if you have a director that's not going to let them, you know, deviate from what they've got, and I think that that was the case with the Solo film going in, is they were sticking too much to slapstick stuff and they weren't allowing them to kind of do their own thing. So they had to come in and step in and say, hey, we're gonna swap you out right now.
Yeah.
But
too
it's
much.
Definitely interesting
too
process,
much humor.
Man. I can't wait to learn more about how that process of it all works. But it gets back to that aspect of, like you were saying at the beginning of the episode with the Force Awakens, how we didn't get a lot of that background stuff. It's the nature of the market. You know? I mean, like, if you give too much away, a lot of the mystery and the mysteriousness about it all just evaporates. And then you lose the interest. Like, but by keeping things a mystery, a lot of people are interested to know how things are working and why things are working and why this didn't happen and why this did.
Yeah.
I think the fact that Disney is paying attention to that across all of their IPs is a great thing. I mean, that's one of the things about Disney owning this, that, you know, to have trust in Disney. They're really good at playing it tight to the vest so their product can have the best life it can.
Yeah. No, that's true. That is true. And that's where, you know, conflict in the creative process is just inevitable, and often it produces an even better film. And that's, you know, that's the case for the original trilogy production, all the way through the prequels, all the way through, you know, all great creative work is a sort of, it's a fight. You're wrestling, it's competing visions, and sometimes, hopefully, iron sharpens iron. We will find out with episode 9, but hey, listen, we'll turn our eyes to Solo next. But it's nice to kind of take a little, you know, moment to pause and reflect on you know, the saga films back on The Last Jedi before we take off again on the Solo journey. Hey, I want to take a brief time out at this point in the episode to tell you guys about a brand new sponsor for the Star Wars Report podcast. And I tell you what, Mark,
I'm laying it over here.
Way off in the corner,
in my,
hiding out.
Yep, here we go. In my hand right now.
You need a
that crackly, beautiful plastic. It is.
He's already escaping on you. Something. You need a restraining bolt. Have you not watched A New Hope? He's going to take off looking for Kenobi.
It's the Sphero BB-8, because Sphero is sponsoring the Star Wars Report podcast. Now, just imagine my joy. I'm very excited about this because I've always loved Sphero, and the Sphero BB-8 was really, because you know me, Mark, I'm not really the biggest collector, but that has always been my must-have Star Wars toy. And I remember when it came out, the year it came out, right before The Force Awakens, the first time I saw them in person was at Dragon Con.
Comic-Con? No?
Dragon Con. I saw Brian Brushwood and his gang were there doing a live show, and they just put two BB-8s on a table and started doing a battle royale to try to knock one off the table.
I remember watching that from one of the fans out in the audience.
It was
now,
amazing.
But you did, though, meet them at New York Comic Con, though, didn't you?
That is true, yeah. In fact, I've actually had a chance to meet Adam, who's, by the way, one of the founders of Sphero, and we did a whole video of the Sphero booth and the New York Comic Con exclusive they had there, and we put that up on our Facebook page. You can still find the video there. But like I say, I'm just thrilled to have Sphero, because I absolutely love what they do. And they have, of course, the BB-8. You guys all have seen, I'm sure, the BB-8. But now they have the BB-9E, the evil BB-8 twin brother. And the Sphero R2-D2, a fully functional R2-D2 that is app-controlled via your smart device. And here's the big news, Mark. They have slashed the prices on all three of these. So, you know, like, you're going to pay like $180 for R2-D2? Uh-uh. No. How about this? $99. R2-D2, $99. BB-8, how about $79 right now? Amazing price points right now while supplies last. And, well,
and
speaking
yeah,
of,
think about the Force Band. Those are $80. That's an extra $80 that you would add to the.
Hey Mark. I mean, yeah. How about this? How about we give them one for free? A free Force Band. With your order, again, while supplies last. So I just absolutely, I've been playing around. So the first one I unboxed.
$65 or so discount, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the first one I've unboxed is the R2-D2. I've already been playing around with R2. R2-D2 is going out with me on a top secret, I guess it's not so top secret since I'm saying it here, a trip that is definitely, may or may not be related to a film that rhymes with polo. out to LA. Exactly. What mission? And so I'm taking R2 with me so that we can, R2 can travel with me and I can take pictures with R2 throughout the trip. So, it's amazing. And the really cool thing is the app, because besides just being a controller, Sphero has the Sphero educational app where you can learn a little bit about coding. And the app itself has a holographic mode where you can kind of stage yourself inside the Millennium Falcon and look around from the perspective of BB-8 while BB-8's rolling around. And BB-8 will, it's like as you walk forward through the Millennium Falcon from the perspective of BB-8 kind of down low virtually, it tracks your movement and BB-8 will roll along with you. So I tried this with R2-D2. It was amazing. So here's what you need to do. Go to Sphero.com/Star Wars. That's Sphero, Sphero, Sphero.com/Star Wars. And when you check out, how about not all those amazing savings you're already going to get? Use code Star Wars Report. It's the full sentence. Star Wars Report 10. Star Wars Report 10. And you can use that code at checkout.
No spaces.
Just straight through Star Wars Report 10 and get an additional 10% off. Your Sphero droid. These are the droids you're looking for, and we do thank Sphero so much for sponsoring the Star Wars Report podcast.
Rah.
Dude, I'm so happy. I can't wait. I'm gonna, which by the way, so here's also full transparency. The ad part's over, but I'm still talking about them because I love them. They sent us the full suite of droids, so there's three droids and three hosts. So I passed it along and I let Bruce take first pick. And Bruce was like, "I gotta have the BB-8." So I gotta get Bruce the BB-8, and I'm sending you the BB-9E here shortly so that you can unbox them, and you'll do that probably on our Facebook. So keep an eye out for that too. So yeah.
In fact, one of our patrons was sharing his own review with it, and I was like, "Oh my God, R2 does so many things. I made a wrong choice, but I stick to it because I want that BB-9E." But
you now do love. I know. I'm, you do I'm love the dark side.
Another one. Yeah. It's weird because my wife, she's down at Disneyland right now, and she's like, "Are you a First Order officer or a Jedi Master?" I'm like, "I'm a Jedi Master," and yet I like the emblemage of all the dark side stuff. Like,
you're just a sympathizer. Listen, you can empathize with the dark side. Yeah, for sure.
I enlisted until I saw the brutalities. And I was
exactly.
Like, "Get you, man, and your imperial regime."
Hey, let's talk about Lord of the Rings. What?
Oh, okay.
Wait, hang on. This isn't the Lord of the Rings report, but...
We can learn a lot of things from the Tolkien world.
Oh, which, of course, and as you guys probably know, if you've listened to the show for any period of time, I am a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. In fact...
So am I.
Confession, No, should I say this on a Star Wars podcast?
Well, I got Minas Tirith sitting beside me.
Don't tell anybody, but Riley, like, Lord of the Rings is even more awesome than Star Wars in some ways. I kind of like it more. Tell anybody. Okay.
Oh, man. Oh, we're getting our fandom card pulled for that.
I know. Come at me, bro. But
that's like Bruce saying that about Star Trek.
Well, we had when was it? Last week? Week before? When they announced the, what's his face from the Iron Man movies and John...
John Favreau.
Favreau. I almost said John Trevorrow. Like with Trevor Noah is like, I don't know. I was just mashing up names, but of course we know that, Disney is doing their own streaming service and that this Star Wars show is going to be a part of it, led by the likes of Jon Favreau. But, an interesting piece that came out the other week was, Amazon, with their own library of content, they have gotten the Lord of the Rings license and they'll be doing their own Lord of the Rings series. Now, not an adaptation, mind you. Which has been a big point of confusion. A lot of people think it's another adaptation. No, it's going to be set within Middle Earth, and probably surround the events of Lord of the Rings, but it won't be an adaptation of the books. And the interesting thing is evidently they are so confident in this thing that they are investing up to $500 million.
You got to say it like Dr. Evil.
$500 million! Nice. Nice. But yeah, it's
wow.
So according to Reuters, Amazon paid $250 million for the rights alone. And so once they couple this with production marketing costs, yeah, that's like $500 million.
That's now, a smart bet like Star Wars, though. I mean, this is one of those things like, you know, Peter Jackson's shown that if you go in depth, you can't screw this up. And I mean, Star Wars is the same way. You know, Disney bought it. It's like, if as long as they do it right,
yeah,
this is going to work.
Well, and that's granted, what,
you know, some people are like, well, they're not doing it right, but...
Well, and that's kind of what the people are asking is, what does this have to do with Star Wars? I think it has a lot to do with Star Wars, because the comparison here is that's the level of investment I want to see with the sort of depth in a Star Wars series. Like, I don't want, you know, 22, 44-minute episodes that are all formulaic and, you know, it's just, I don't know, a bunch of bounty hunter, a gang of bounty hunters that you have that are all just like a bunch of, you know, character stereotypes.
Who are we getting this week?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It'd be like I don't want to get the A-Team Star Wars version, right? Where they just have a... Actually, now that I say that out loud, now I kind of want it. But no, I don't. But the kind of in-depth storytelling that... And again, sorry for the inevitable comparison, Game of Thrones has... what I want to see. That's just 10 episodes. All you need to do is 10 really good episodes, right? An hour each. That's what we want to see.
Well, what if you take your Game of Thrones reference, and I'm going to raise you one that you probably aren't going to know, but have you ever watched Blackadder?
Blackadder? No.
Okay, so it's a Monty Python type film. It's got the guy that plays Bean or Johnny English in it. But he's Blackadder, and each episode or season, I can't remember which it was, I think it's season, each season, it would jump forward in time, and the cast would be in new lives, and, you know, it started out in the Middle Ages, then it went to the Renaissance, then it would go to World War II, you know, then it would go to Korea kind of thing, and I like to see something that's set, like, in the Old Republic with the old Jedi and stuff, and then, like, after a season, it jumps forward, and we're seeing, like, the descendants of those people, like, dealing with some events now, like, hundreds of years down the road. And then the next season, we jump even farther down, and they're able to, like, give you a big pie-shaped view of the Old Republic. You know, I mean, that's the one era right now that is completely wide open, that if you're going to mess with anything, go back in time and do it. I mean, especially if you go back far enough that you could wipe out a planet like Alderaan, take it to dust,
yeah,
and have so much time that the planet could regrow itself and be the planet you know later. You know, I mean, deal with those type of gaps where it's like you could screw something up horribly bad. We could like blow up Alderaan and find out that they established a new Alderaan in a whole new sector, and that's the one that we see later. Like, I mean, the sky's the limits in that regard. But I would love to see something that did that, where they jumped, you know, a big, you know, huge time frames in throughout, and so you get a chunk of each window kind of thing. Even if it's more than a decade, like give me a 500 year gap between each season. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. No. Definitely. Sorry,
like
I got
Lost Tribe of the Sith kind of did that.
Yeah.
Way. John Jackson Miller did that with his book series.
And the other good comparison
that worked out well
with
it tied into what they were doing post New Jedi Order when those Sith came out. It was like, here you had that entire backstory that John Jackson Miller laid out. It also tied in with his book as well as the comics that they had coming. So like you could do a lot of stuff with that. And I think about, you know, Lord of the Rings, like they're already doing that to a degree with their games and stuff, tying their stuff in, working on that continuity. I mean, Tolkien was big on continuity.
Yeah, for sure. And I'd be very interested to see also, like, if they'd be willing to invest anywhere that kind of budget. Because, like, the Disney coffers, like, I just Googled it because I was curious. It's the most expensive film budget officially ever is $397 million. And it's for Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. Of course, that doesn't include marketing.
Crap. Amazon's really going all in, man.
Yeah, of course, you know, that's for probably multiple seasons or at least a full season of episodes, but still.
How does it compare to Game of Thrones?
But, of course, remember that $500 million number, $250 of it's for the rights, the actual production budget's going to be about $250. So that production budget. But by the way, the production budget for Infinity War and its untitled fourth film, which they kind of pair together, right? This Avengers and the next one is reported to be, it's unofficial, but close to $1 billion just for those two movies.
Dang.
And this is coming with the with like rumors that like Robert Downey Jr.'s paycheck for those two movies is $200 million. How would you like to make $200 million to be in a movie?
Oh man, that's just nuts. See, and when it comes to that kind of stuff, though, like on one hand, I get it. You know, you've got them where you want them, but the other side is like, man, you're set for life. You don't even need.
He never has to work again. Robert Downey Jr. never has to work again. He's done. Right.
I mean, I would almost say, you know, no, please don't give me another raise because you're going to make it where no one will afford to put me in their films. Like, I mean, I guess that comes down to what you're in it for. I mean, if I was doing acting and stuff, I'd want to be in as many movies as I could. I'd want to, you know, be around for that, you know, be beloved for my characters that I did, not money I made doing it.
Yeah.
Because I was good at it. But
yeah,
be a Robin Williams story any day.
Yeah. Hey, the Millennium Falcon. Here's an interesting little, I guess, kind of fan theory of sorts. Not really a lot to back this up, but it's pretty cool. It's the idea of the Millennium Falcon as a character, and how we view it, and how the Solo movie may change the way we look at it forever. So Alex Leadbeater at Screen Rant has this rather complicated theory about Solo that would explain what makes the Millennium Falcon so special. And that, are you ready for this, Mark? This is straight from an Inverse article. I have a link to it in the show notes. the ship's computer might get harvested from Lando's droid at some point during Solo. And this would be an explanation for how the Millennium Falcon's computer works. The ship itself can communicate directly with the droids and has its own personality, and that's been the case since the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
Now that would be pretty sweet. That's
was the one that said there was three brains, and they've played with that before.
Well,
but never to the point like this.
Remember Tales of the Bounty Hunter? Remember the Tales of the Bounty Hunter book? Wasn't IG-88 like a sentient part of a ship or something?
Yeah, no, he took over the Death Star by the time it was all said and done.
Oh, I forgot. That was a weird.
Yeah, he took over every droid that was like within a vicinity, and then he took over the Death Star as well.
IG-88. Yeah, you know, sometimes it was reaching a little far maybe for that story. I don't know. I loved it as a kid when I read those books, but I would love to see that kind of thing. I think there's a lot of room for something like that in Solo. When I hear that, it doesn't ring terrible idea to me. Who knows if they'll actually do it?
Oh, and I mean, think about this. Lando's droid's supposed to be sentient to the point that it's modifying itself. Okay, and we do know that there were three brains and that the three brains didn't get along. So what if, in per this theory, Lando's droid gets put into the ship to basically be the mitigator, you know, like trying to stop the two from fighting, and it just realizes that we're never going to get around this, but I can at least task these two brains to do different things, and by interfacing through me, we can at least do something. Like, so I think that is a good opportunity. The question is, would Ron Howard think of something like that? I mean, because that is a reference that, yeah, it's out there, and yeah, even Legends played with it to a small degree, but nowhere near the level that they could have. I mean, they could have easily made the droid brains anything like 3PO, where the droid, you know, it had a personality. Or it could have been like Lebo, where it was like, hey, I need this fixed. Come on, get off your butt. Chewie, go back here, fix it. I'm itching back here. It's burning. Like, I mean, there were so many options they could do with that, but
yeah, no, I can see that.
I don't see Ron Howard. Like, I don't like he's got an attention for detail, but when I see his attention to detail, I see it more applying to like military details and stuff like that. Not so much those little tiny throwaway lines that you could explore. Like, it'd be something that I would get a kick out of, but I don't necessarily think that would be something unless they gave it a full on character. I could see that being cut out, you know?
Yeah. No, it depends. Yeah, that doesn't seem as much his style, but I like the idea. It seems like something that would have been in the other script and may survive his cut of the film. Who knows? Who knows? We will find out. Hey, dude, we're going to find out in like what? Hang on. It's March 26th. So it's like less than 2 months. Less than 2 months, and we'll see in this movie. Dang.
Wow.
It's crazy.
And then we'll have lots of time to dwell on Solo.
Yeah, that's true.
Episode 9.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, we have like the full year and a half, which would be nice, I guess. Yeah, man. Well, you know what? We got one more thing we got to hit. We got to hit Boba's Bounty. Before we do, just a shout out to everyone supporting the show directly on Patreon at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's where you can catch all kinds of cool bonus content, such as, you ever see the clip of the beauty pageant, the such as, never mind, it's hilarious. It's an in joke. Steve Glosson does it all the time. It's hilarious. Oh, man. But yeah. No, but yeah, sorry, I totally lost my train of thought. Oh, Patreon. Yeah, patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's where we do Rogue Transmissions, our weekly bonus content, where you can also catch things like our Star Wars Report t-shirts and also get in on the Bothan High Council, where we meet every month or so to catch up on the latest Star Wars and just have a conversation over a Skype group chat. And that's a really fun way to actually have a more in-depth conversation. But every patron at every level, no matter your donation, can jump in on our Facebook group chat, which is always a lot of fun. We were just chatting back and forth in it earlier today, Mark. And so we have a great time there. Patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Mark, let's rapid fire our Boba's bounties and then we got to get out of here. But what have you been up to this week, Star Wars wise?
Well, for me, with the news of Toys R Us going out of business across the globe, I had to rush down to mine and get it. Although I also did hear KB Toys is rising from the ashes at this opportune moment. Way to go, guys. Way to seize the opportunity. But yeah, I went down, and luckily they had one of the Rey Star Wars exclusive, Toys R Us exclusive Rey on Crayt, with the die-cast weapons and stuff. It was not the normal black series that I was used to. So I managed to jump on that, got it for like $20. So it's not a great deal. It was 10% off, but it was pretty nice. They did have a Poe Dameron helmet for $39.99, and man, I was itching for it. I was debating hard. I really want that helmet, but at $39, I was just kind of like, staring this way. So the cool thing about it, though, was it came with two of the lightsabers. They're both metal. The blade is removable, so I was able to give my Mark Hamill one from the regular Black Series one that doesn't come with one. So now he has a lightsaber hilt, and I've sent my wife on a mission. I told her, don't find me anything but a $5 fin, because I've seen them out there. I didn't get it when I should have, because I didn't have that lightsaber. But now I have that lightsaber, so I'm going to get myself a $5 fin and put the lightsaber in Finn's hand. And then I'm also going to be getting the Ben Solo version of Kylo to put back to back with my extra Rey in Jedi costuming now, because she's just too badass, man. I love it.
Yeah.
And the metal weapon and stuff, the details on that, I love the heft of it. Small little toy and all, but I get a kick out of it, man.
Nice. Yeah, it's the end of an era, though, man. It's a sad, sad day.
It is sad, but like we were talking on the Patreon page with the Hasbro HasLab, you know, and the sail barge and stuff that coming out, and you know these new opportunities that they're exploring in this new era of, you know, toy delivery systems and stuff.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, we were talking there how like I've shifted from the 3.75 line. I'm now in the 6-inch line, and like I at that price, I don't know if I would want to buy the sail barge just to put a few characters on it, because I don't have a lot of that particular part of the film saga in figure. You know, I mean, that wasn't one that I rushed out. I was more into the troopers and droids and Jedis. Like any of those, I got a butt ton of. I would love to see HasLab start doing something like that where they're selling backgrounds and stuff. We started seeing more scale models of the Millennium Falcon cockpit, things like that. Like I would love to see that be the new direction for collectors, because you know, you see all these people with these great stands and stuff, they got all these great lighting and stuff, but the best ones that I have seen are the people that go out there and make their own custom bases, get the little sand, all the details right, and it looks like they're actually in those set piece places, and it just really just makes the pop of your collection, and I'd love to see them go that direction as well.
That was pretty amazing. For me, Boba's Bounty this week, you know, it's hard to say because it's always Star Wars stuff. And I got to admit, because we've already talked about the Blu-ray, which I watched the documentary this week. And we already thoroughly kind of broke that down. That's really the big Star Wars thing that I've done this week. I'm trying to think if there are any particular you know, I'm trying to remember.
You're playing with BB-8 and R2, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, playing with R2, but you know, we talked about him in the sponsorship segment. So I feel like I've more, sort of semi failed to come up with a good Boba's bounty. Oh wait, ding. I've listened to the last 3 or 4 episodes. They've just come out. Absolutely amazing. It's the Soundtrack Show, David Collins' brand new podcast, where he is analyzing film scores, including a lot of Star Wars. Of course, he used to do Star Wars Oxygen, my absolute favorite Star Wars podcast. I've
a lot of people
as a guy who hosts one.
Come back.
It's still there, and so it's come back in a way. It's a much broader topic, but it's weekly, which is pretty cool. And he did an episode on great melodies tell great stories, and he highlights some Star Wars stuff there. And he has a great episode called Doom and Gloom, Music Has a Word for Death, and he talks about Dies Irae, the ancient religious notation, the do-do-do-do, and how that phrase of music appears in so much in film score and symphonic music, and he kind of talks about the history and, you know, how film score affects. And as a huge film score nerd, it was great to hear, and also very gratifying because, listen, I am no David Collins. I am a film score nerd, but I do not have the knowledge or expertise to ever do anything like what he does. But I felt slightly gratified that he used in his Word for Death episode, he used a brief moment of the Symphonie Fantastique. Who's the composer? Dudamel. Conducted it recently. Hang on. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. This is going to drive me nuts, so I have to do it.
We'll leave this to rest.
All right. Symphony Fantasy. Oh, Berlioz, of course. Hector Berlioz. Berlioz or Berlioz, depending on how you pronounce it. It's one of my favorite symphonies ever, and I've used segments of that music on this show like a year or two ago with Bobby Roberts. He was a guest on the show, and I was just trying to talk about the way, you know, film score does sound like some of the cooler rock and roll classical music composers, and I was playing a segment of that. I also played that same segment when we did a panel on the music of Star Wars at Dragon Con 2 years ago, and so it's just, you know, it's one of my favorite symphonies, and he highlighted some of that in that episode. So, I doubt David Collins listens to anything we do. But I just felt excited by the serendipity that he had done that. And it was also pretty cool that Bobby shot me a text and he was like, "Hey, dude, you know what they did on the Soundtrack Show? They highlighted Berlioz in the Fantasy Symphony." So anyway, go download it. Lots of Star Wars stuff. The Soundtrack Show. Nice and easy name to remember. And
the Soundtrack Show.
This week on the Soundtrack Show, David Collins talks about Star Wars musical in an intelligent way, unlike other... You did, never mind. I was about to do a dig. I
like the way you bit your tongue.
It would be the other day
with my daughter, literally.
It would have been bad if I said, David Collins does the Soundtrack Show with an intelligence and in-depth discussion that can't be found on a certain other YouTube show.
Oh.
All right, I'll stop.
Why would you do that?
No, listen, so cold. David Collins is the man. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. He's a great guy.
Luckily, I don't listen to any shows. I'm ignorant of all this.
You're like, I don't know what he's saying. Mark is like, I'm not taking any part of this. I'm done. I'm out. Oh, man. Speaking of out, we're out of here. And we're calling it quits on this week's episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. Mark, thanks for tagging along with me this hour. Had a great old time. Always good to talk.
I built a studio in my garage.
Amen. Bruce will be back next week. And I will be in L.A. We'll be working out some interesting coverage and some stuff like that. That'll all be coming up on the show this week. So if you're not subscribed, subscribe. If you are subscribed, review. If you've already reviewed, hey, check out our Patreon. If you're already a patron, you rock. How about that? Hey, thanks, Sphero, for sponsoring this episode. Listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested and you didn't know that, hey, they've got this huge set of discounts and the free Force bands and you've been waiting to get this, now's the time. Sphero.com/Star Wars and use that code Star Wars Report 10 for an additional 10% off. And we do thank Spiro for supporting the podcast. And we got some really cool stuff planned with Spiro. We're going to be partnering with them as we cover the Star Wars half marathon here in about a month, a little less than a month. I'll be down at Disney in Orlando once again running the half marathon. I did 10 miles today, Mark.
Nice.
Oh, I'm so tired.
Man, for me, it's all about elevation. I went with my scouts. We went up Humbug State Mountain, Mountain at Humbug State Park. It was a 6-mile hike, 3 miles up, an elevation of like 3,000 feet in less than a half mile or something like that. Mm. And my 5-year-old crushed 5 of the 6 miles. I carried her the last mile.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. That just tells you how much energy your kids have. You're just trying to wear them out just so you can have some peace.
And the next day, my legs were jello, and I'm like, how are you feeling? She's like, I'm good. I'm just like, I took my backpack off. I felt like I had helium bags attached to me. I was going to float away.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for this week's podcast. Again, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. Yeah, I love this remix. Yeah. I was something just like this. Alright. Dude, that's a show.
Yeah.
That's a show, my friend. I'll export it right here and upload if you don't mind knocking out the notes, and I'll just shoot you a text once it's uploaded. You can literally go ahead and post tonight. It'll just be there in the feed for everyone if you don't mind.
Yeah, I got to get another episode posted as well. So,
nice
excuse.
All right. Well, I will go ahead and process this audio and let you know as soon as it's uploaded.
All right. Later. All right,
talk soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for riding Star Tours. Bye-bye.